And I mean, I know when I used to drink, I'd kind of, that was the time where I'd go off and say, you know what? I didn't really regret what I said. I regret how I said it, right? Because wait, even whether you're drinking or not, what you're feeling is what you're feeling, but you shouldn't have to rely on alcohol or booze or drugs to have to be able to say how you feel. Like, that's the only way we're going to connect, and that's the only way people are going to feel better and start healing, right?
Jason LaChance, your host of Knocking Doors Down here. And I started doing this podcast because through my addiction recovery and mental health struggles that include anxiety and depression, I want to talk to people that have turned their greatest adversities into their greatest advantages. And that's what Knocking Doors Down is all about. And Kim Bellis is an amazing example of that. She is the founder of Sober Is the New Cool. After her son was diagnosed with some seizure issues, she started Sober as a New Cool because she quit drinking because her son couldn't drink anymore either, and she wanted to set a good example. She tells the whole story. We have an amazing discussion about so many different topics, including some of the struggles that women go through, including, you know, motherhood and aging. And she opens up about some amazing stuff, incredibly insightful and just a wonderful person. While you're checking Knocking Doors Down out, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And if you get a lot out of this podcast, share with a friend. And don't forget the archive of interviews we have. Bam Margera, Brandon Novak, Kat Von D, Charlie Sheen, Edward Furlong, Kelly Osbourne. The list goes on and on of amazing guests that have been on the podcast sharing how they have found purposeful lives. Speaking of purpose, how about a lifestyle brand with purpose? 5150 LTM. That's right. Not only is it a lifestyle brand that can fit whatever it is you're trying to achieve in life, but they give back to the community. And you, the listener of Knocking Doors Down, get 20% off every time you shop at 5150 LTM. All you have to do is use the code KDD20 at checkout and get 20% off. And how does 5150 give back to the community? Portions of the sales benefit the Carlos Vieira Foundation. Their three amazing programs, the Race to End the Stigma, the Race for Autism, and the Race to Be Drug-Free. More on the Carlos Vieira Foundation, go to carlosvierafoundation.org. Okay, wait, now I gotta ask, that Sober is the New Cool shirt. I've not seen that on the store. Is this the limited edition Kim Bellis only shirt?
Well, it is, and people are asking about it because of the sparkles. And you know, I tell them I could have these made, but it would cost a fortune. So I send them to Amazon exactly where to get the beads and how to do it themselves. So you know what? They can sparkle away and not have to spend too much money, right?
All right. Oh, I remember because there was, I'm a big Kiss fan. And they had shirts and they were just for women where it was Kiss, but it looked like the rhinestones. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Like one of their old album covers. So I bought a bigger women's one, and then eventually they came out with a men's one. And I'm like, I don't care. I'll wear a woman's shirt. It looks cool.
Exactly. And you know what? Whatever makes people feel good, as far as I'm concerned, just do it, right?
Yes.
And being sober, I think the more it's going, the cooler it's getting, you know? People are catching what we have, I think.
You know what? And it's interesting. I did... an episode with Natanya Ross. She was a child actor in a show called Alex Mack. And we were talking about that, the people that you attract now. And she's like, it's interesting, you know, in reflection, I'm like, people are attracted to me in a different way now. And they got what I want, but it's not the fame and money and status. It's the way I work my sobriety and conduct my life.
Yeah. And you know what? I think there's a sense of peace and there's a sense of authenticity with that. You know, like there is no liquid courage there. When you tell somebody something, it really is from your heart. It's not like, oh, that was the booze talking or they, you know, they said this or they acted like this. You know, what you say, you know, you don't have to regret what you say because you're coming from a place of really truly where what you're thinking, not, you know, alcohol induced or drug induced, to be able to feel what you're feeling or get, you know, get that place where you can say, oh, I was just drunk or I was just, you know, on drugs and, you know, I didn't really mean it. No, what you say is what you mean. And yeah. I think that's part of it, right?
Well, and I think the important piece of that too is sometimes we do say things that we mean. They might end up hurtful to the individual. Our intent wasn't to send a hurtful message. We were trying to communicate clearly, and a lot of that comes, you know, with maybe a boundary or something, but we also have that skill set to make an amends, as simple as, hey, I was wrong. How can we make this right?
Yeah. And I mean, I know when I used to drink, I'd kind of, that was the time where I'd go off and say, you know what? I didn't really regret what I said. I regret how I said it, right? Because wait, even whether you're drinking or not, what you're feeling is what you're feeling, but you shouldn't have to rely on alcohol or booze or drugs to have to be able to say how you feel. Like, that's the only way we're going to connect. And that's the only way people are going to feel better and start healing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It helps build the camaraderie, like you said, the connection, the community, which is so vital, for sure. And you're great at, I mean, you know, Kim and I guess we've known each other about 6 months, and I just adore you. And I love what you're doing. And I do want you to share the story. Maybe if there's people for the first time learning about you, trust me, people start following Kim on social media. If I've had so many bad days or just tough day, I don't have bad days, tough moments in days. And it's like, oh, message from Kim. Here we go. But, you know, share how you came to the point where it's like, I'm done drinking, because it's an interesting quote unquote rock bottom, so to speak, or a aha moment, whatever term you want to use.
Well, so, you know, I thought I was like, you know, the average mother, you know, doing, you know, everyday things, the class mom, doing cancer, you know, benefits, whatever. And on the outside looking in, you know, it looked like I had a pretty great life. And from one day to the next, my 13-year-old started having seizures, and we thought it was football related. And it really didn't matter, because push came to shove. He was sick. He needed medication. And so after about 3 or 4 months in, he was no longer having seizures. And I said, you got to get back out and start being with your friends. And he'd come home all the time after 30, 40 minutes. And one night I said, okay, this is wrong. What's going on here, Matthew? And he said, you know, Mom, I just don't fit in. Everybody's doing drugs. Everybody's drinking. And in Canada, our drinking age is 18. So they start, you know, everybody starts early, but in Canada, it'll be a little bit even earlier, I think. So I was looking at him. I said, Matthew, you don't need booze to have fun. And as I said it, I swear, I had the biggest glass of wine in my hand. And it was like a truck hit me. And at that minute, I said, Matthew, I'm going to stop drinking for 3 months just to prove a point, to show you, because I used to drink wine every night, right? I mean, the martinis, this, that. But, you know, I seemed everything was kind of in control, so to speak. And after 3 months, he said, see, now you can be like everybody else, Mom. And I said, no. Okay, I'll do another 3 months. And at that point, I was already starting to feel a lot better. I was sleeping more and having a sick child also. Listen, I had to be on top of it in case something did go wrong to be able to drive him to the hospital. So my focus was him. It was easier for me to say I was doing it for him, because I would never have done it just for me. So he gave me back my life. But quickly, I realized that, you know what, everywhere I went, everybody said to me, okay, you've proved your point now, get over it. Come in the corner, have a shot with me, or a drink, or a martini. I won't tell. And I said, no. I'll know. And how can I look at my son in the face if I'm telling him, you don't need this to have fun, and I'm doing it on the side? So that was more than 10 years ago. And Sober's the New Cool was born, because 10 years ago, there was none of this, all this chitter chatter on Instagram. And I couldn't find anywhere to talk about how I was feeling. And I, you know, alcohol was not, we had alcohol problems in my family. So I wasn't a stranger to alcohol problems. And, you know, I just realized the longer I went, the better I felt. But I thought, if I'm 52 years old, 10 years ago, and I could say my Matthew was 15, how the hell is he going to get through social situations if I'm having trouble, you know, like saying, you know, trying not to get mad at people also, but trying to like keep my boundary. And so Sober's the New Cool was, my sister made the logo, and it was just kind of done in a kitchen, you know, and it was Facebook page was born for him to have a place to be able to talk about why he didn't drink. Because yeah. even though there wasn't a problem, he was embarrassed to say he was epileptic and he couldn't drink. So it really doesn't matter why you can't drink or why you choose not to drink. Quite frankly, it's nobody's business, number one. But number two, it shouldn't be an issue if you don't drink. And, you know, it just, the minute we went on Facebook, Europe was the first place that like just blew up. They just, people just kept sending me messages saying, how do you stop? Where do you start? What do you do? How did you do it? And then I realized this was not just about my son. And it wasn't about me. And then I also realized I had drank way too much in my lifetime. And I liked myself a lot better without alcohol in it.
The Knockin' Doors Down book shares all the history and inspiration behind the Carlos Vieira Foundation and how it all started. All proceeds from the book benefit the Carlos Vieira Foundation's Race to Be Drug-Free campaign. So what's that all about? Through the Race to Be Drug-Free campaign, Carlos Vieira Foundation raises awareness about drug abuse, donates to drug-free programs, and brings drug-free speakers into schools to educate youth. The Race to Be Drug-Free campaign's main program is the Gloves Not Drugs boxing program. This program is completely free for kids between the ages of 8 and 17 to learn discipline, strength, respect, camaraderie, and the art of boxing. The program was created to keep kids off the streets, out of gangs, and away from drugs. For more info and to get involved, check out CarlosVieiraFoundation.org.
It's interesting how you say, like, Europe. You know, one of the really powerful things that a friend of mine that I shared, you know, Kim, we talked on another podcast that I do, and I shared it with her because she was kind of the mommy's wife wine club. Yeah. You know, it was like you, very, you know, involved. Not, and when I say involved, I don't mean that you don't have a boundary with your son, you know, but, you know, you were there. You were the mom that you could be able to be there and be involved in different things. Very much the same way. She's a high achiever. But it was that it, you know, our talk helped her start questioning, like, I feel like crap. Yeah. I'm doing this, you know, I got kids going into college. I'm sitting there telling them the dangers of excessive drinking drugs that are out there now, you know, look at me. And so I think, you know, for me, where you touched my heart in finding you is that there's so many women out there. They're good moms. And, you know, I'm not slamming you, but there is that kind of end of the day. Oh, this day I'm going to have my glass of wine and it turns into a bottle or whatever it is, you know.
And a bottle is very easy to have because once you finish homework and you want to pull every hair out of your head, I mean, you open that bottle and then you start making your dinner and then you have some wine with dinner. So a bottle is very quick. And I didn't think it was an issue, but it is. A bottle a day is an issue.
Yeah. I was the negotiator. It's okay because it's been a stressful day. I switched from hard alcohol to just wine and like that. I'm making dinner. I'm relaxing. I'm, you know, and then one bottle went to two bottles to two and a half.
Yes.
And then it was like, oh, I'm going to just switch back to beer. And, you know, it was that negotiation process. And I'm seeing that with women, with, you know, with moms that are just that it's kind of become a culture, so to speak.
And I think a lot of them too, I mean, I'm speaking for myself, you're in this world where you're taking care of everybody, you're doing everything for everybody, you kind of get lost somewhere, you start feeling a little less than how you should be feeling about yourself. And then those insecurities come up, you're aging, your kids are paying, like all these other things start, and it's like a wall that keeps building and building and building. And, you know, all of a sudden, like, for me, it was easier just to drink to, like, one, relax, two, I don't know, I guess I just felt I wasn't good enough. I should have been a little more. I should be doing something a little bit better with my kids. And there was always something. And I think it's a part of our self-esteem. When we start looking after everybody, we kind of fall to the bottom. Mm-hmm. And we forget all the good qualities we have. And, you know, it just becomes a habit. And for some, they can kind of manage it. But do you really want to manage your life? Don't you want to have a full life?
Yeah. Well, and that's that you nailed it right there. So much is managing to the point for lots of us, it becomes unmanageable.
And you know, everybody says when you stop drinking, you have so much time on your hands. And all my friends, and my husband drinks, and when he does, like Dry January or these different occasions during the year, everybody says the same thing. My God, I have so much time on my hands. Isn't that quite something? Like that they really realize how much time goes into going to the wine store, getting the wine store, feeling lousy, not exercising. Like there's all these other things that go along with it. So
Yeah, hitting the bar a couple days a week, whatever it is. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What did your husband think when you stopped drinking?
Well, it's taken quite some time, even till a few years ago. I would say even maybe 2 years ago, where he said, you never really had a problem. I don't really, when I would talk about Matthew and I, because we did a lot of, going to the psychologist and psychiatrist, because, you know, 13 years old and playing football 5 days a week to nothing. I can't see how you wouldn't become depressed. And I do believe mental health and addiction go hand in hand. It's just my theory. So for him, it was kind of like, one, I was talking about our family outside of the bubble, which he had trouble with, you know, the sharing aspect. And I said, well, that's too bad. If I can help one person, I didn't have anybody to help me, so I'm going to help somebody. And then as time went on, he kept saying, you said you drank too much. You didn't really drink too much. I said, yeah, I did. You're 6'2", I'm 5'2", and I would have a bottle. You'd have a bottle and a half. Hello? Which part are you getting? You know? Yeah. So I guess, but I think it's a part of still the shame, you know, that goes with it is now he's very proud that I don't drink and I'm doing everything I'm doing and I'm helping people. He's like really become my biggest, you know, fan, I would say. And he'll do anything or drive me wherever I have to go to be involved where I have to. But for a long time, it was hard for him for me to share the inside of the white picket fence.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, right? Yeah. That pulling up back the veil can be a little scary for many. You know, I know for me, a lot of my substance use was such a big part of my defense mechanism. And I was able to put on a good face. I wasn't genuine. I could be the character of whoever it was. You know, people want to talk about the famous musicians I met. Cool. All right. I'll be that. You know, I was playing a character for so many for so long.
And I think, too, that's one thing is, you know, I thought I was so good at communicating. And I remember when I would do events for cancer, I would have like two martinis before it would start because I was so afraid that everything wasn't perfect. And I was so nervous that, you know, what was I going to say? Who was I going to talk to? How was I going to raise enough money that night during? And I missed so much of the joy, you know, because of that. And that all went back to my insecurity of not feeling like I could manage on my own. And now I know I'm much better without it than I was with it.
Yeah. From your perspective, you brought up something, you know, several of those insecurities, you know, and I don't know unless I talk to a friend, a female friend like you, that's a mom, married. You know, what do you think a lot of those insecurities that women are facing now? You know, I mean, obviously the aging and so many women, the outward beauty is put on them and et cetera, and, you know.
You know what? And I think, you know, one is the aging thing. Now we're turning it a bit where the gray hair is okay and all that is kind of becoming kind of cool also. But, you know, a few weeks ago, I was asked to go help pass Daniel's Law in New York City at Fashion Week. And I have to tell you, after 10 years of being sober, knowing I would be, number one, the oldest one there, the shortest one there at 5'2", I was so insecure. And I can't tell you how many times I had this little wave that would say, oh, if only you had that little shot of vodka, how much easier it would be. And, you know, it was, I had the time of my life, but all those insecurities, I think, come back to from when I was little, you know, you were supposed, you know, the like Cinderella story And then I had my friends that all became doctors or lawyers or accountants or something, really, you know, when the women started to take over a little more. And then I wasn't that. I was a mom at home. And you know what I missed was that's the greatest gift, because without mothers, there would be no children. There would be no world. There would be nothing. So like, hello, we are okay doing what we're doing, right? But it's, I think we're, it's that value where we feel like we're not, you know, and then obviously TikTok and Instagram and everything, everybody's life looks so much better, or everybody's doing so much better. And I keep remembering every time I start to feel I'm not doing enough, I'm not achieving enough, I keep thinking, okay, close your eyes and just stay in your lane. Stay in your lane. Keep doing good. Just come from the heart. Just keep going, keep going. And then it does, it is okay, but it's hard. It's really hard to overcome feeling like you're not enough.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I see it. I spoke at a high school, a couple of classes last week. Ironically, it was like 98%, both classes female. And so I was able to kind of ask, and I was seeing that a lot of young ladies definitely compare their insides to others' outsides and the perception thereof, you know, that here it is, it looks glamorous. I'm like, hey, let me show you something. This right here, this photo, this lady, I know this lady through her agent, who, that's not her boat. That's not even her agent's boat. Her agent did a favor for some guy that, you know, just so they could get this one picture where it's like hashtag living the best life and everything else. Like, they weren't even there. This is all made up. This is all just a pitching of a gimmick here, you know, and it's hard because our minds, we can get off into a story real quick.
Yeah. And the other thing too, I mean, even if somebody does have a boat or does go on vacation or whatever, so good for them. You'll do something else. And whatever you will be, like now I'm realizing for me, I always used to love to give, you know, help people. And I let that go because somebody had said to me in my 40s, you know, Kim, if you think someone's going to do what you do, forget it. It's never going to happen. And I kind of thought, okay, that's like I'm doing too much. I'm being taken advantage. All those whatever stories in my head. And I lost a big part of who I am because that's who I am. And if you're taking advantage of me, oh, that's on you. That's not on me. I'm doing something good. And if I feel good, and you know, that whole thing, follow your passion, you know, no matter if you want to do a yoga class and three people come, do what feels good to you. And you will start to shine and you will start to feel better. And the rest of the world is kind of like, they look at you and go, wow, you've got it together. Right.
Yeah. And you bring up such a valuable point that don't take things personally. So like, yeah, if somebody does take advantage of you in a negative way, because there is a, hey, taking advantage, well, of a situation, you know, you do and have done a lot for cancer and hey, that might have helped someone get better. Yeah. Take advantage of that situation for sure.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So it's just, at the end of the day, it is all an inside job.
And I really think for all these young mothers, if, you know, and I think a lot of them are afraid to share, you know, because we all have children or husbands or sisters or brothers or mothers or fathers. And there's everybody's got some inside stuff going on. So don't, I think by sharing, number one, you'll feel better and you'll find connections that, you know, the minute you start to share, everybody else all of a sudden goes, oh, wow, this is kind of happening in my house. That white picket fence is kind of broken on that side. And that's okay, because nobody's life is perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Many sure try. I don't know about you. I don't want a perfect life. That's too much work in the wrong way.
No, and you know, but a lot of people are so afraid that their kids aren't the smartest or they're not achieving the best or they're not the best athlete. And so much importance is put on that instead of just being kind. Make sure your kid sits beside that kid that's all by himself, because that could be your kid, you know, and make sure that somebody says hello. Because maybe they won't, you know, think about taking their life. There's so many other things that people can do every single day to make this world a better place. And I think that's what we should really, you know, focus on, and especially for those young mothers, because they've got so much love because they are mothers, right?
Yeah.
They have the love to give. So
yeah,
we need to.
Yeah. Take care of you, but you got to take care of yourself first. Otherwise, yeah. You're not going to be there for anyone.
No. And find what that is, right? Who knows what that is? It could be anything. And, you know, sorry to interrupt, but the one thing is, I've had a lot of young mothers lately reach out, and they don't want to come public to talk about their drinking, almost like it's a shameful thing, or they're not like underneath a bridge, living underneath a bridge. That's not what having a problem with alcohol is. And let's stop making it like that, this dirty, ugly secret, because it's not. We can have, problems with food. We can have problems with alcohol. We can have problems with drugs. And, you know, let's embrace it and help each other, like, to figure it out and talk about it and not judge, you know, those eyes, you know, those big eyes. Because I think that's kind of sad.
It is.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month. The Carlos Vieira Foundation, along with Knockin' Doors Down, joined together with the Race to End the Stigma program. The Race to End the Stigma campaign was created to not only change the way people perceive those who are living with mental illness, but also how those who are affected perceive themselves. To find out more about the scholarship program, head over to carlosvierafoundation.org for more info.
But how did you personally get to a point where you stopped taking the judgment personally?
Well, you know, I have to say, I used Matthew for the first 3-4 years, I guess. It was my son. It was like, that was the thing. And then the more it got into those social situations, then it was like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. I don't drink. And it still happens much less now. But occasionally I do get those eyes like, ooh, what's wrong with her? You know, what happened to her? And I think... being on Instagram and whatever, most of the people that knew me were around the world. And it wasn't until lately in Montreal that a lot more press came to Sober the New Cool. And I think that was where it was a lot harder, because it was like, and I said, I talk about alcohol like the sunshine, and that's it. It's no good for me. Call me an alcoholic, call me whatever you want. I don't really care. It's not for me. And I feel so much better without it. And my son can't drink. That's his issue. He's got to deal with it. I can't change that, but I can help somebody else find a life that's better than having alcohol in it, if it's a problem for them.
Yeah. And it just, if we're not going to have a life where we're giving to others, then for me personally, I just don't see a point. Like, I didn't realize that for the longest time, until I started to get to a point where it's like, someone from Europe, a young man from Australia that I check in on regularly, that was like, man, found your podcast. I was about ready to relapse and I flushed my pills. And, you know, you start realizing that just by getting these stories, getting others out there, getting the share out there, putting it out there, you don't know how it's going to come back to you, but you're not focused on what's coming back to you. You just end up amazed by, you know, what it is. I mean, a kind word, like, for me, kind words, it's the greatest thing. Like, oh man, you don't know. Thank you. You know, because I can take that compliment or whatever it is now.
And you know, when someone is struggling, if you do really reach out every single day and you become that pain in their backside, I think that's good, because, you know, I think it comes back down to self-esteem. They're not worth getting through that day or that month or whatever, and they feel so low and who cares? No, I do care, and so do a lot of other people. So by sending out messages and really checking in with people, like you just said, you know, it changes that person's world. And that's huge. That's huge.
Yeah. Share what Sober is the New Cool. I mean, you know, other than a very cool catchphrase, logo, merchandise. I mean, I don't know. I you know what? I'm kind of a jerk. I need to order a darn shirt, because all of my friends have one. You know, like Tim Lodgen came on for his 2-year sober anniversary. He's like, yeah, do you have a Sober is the New Cool shirt? And I'm like, no. No, I don't. I need to order one. But you're doing amazing work other than just bringing awareness.
Well, the Sober is the New Cool t-shirt started like basically so I could give back to either mental health and addiction. That's really what, I don't make any money doing this in the least. I give away more than I sell, but that's okay because to many people, when they put this t-shirt on, that is like a armor for them and they're proud. And you know, when they send me pictures and they have a smile like from one ear to the other saying, you know, sober is the new cool. And they stand tall, they stand differently. I think that's quite amazing that all over the world this is happening. So it's making people, it's like a way for people to talk about it without having to talk about it. Like, what's that shirt? What are you wearing that for? Like, oh, that's really cool. And 9 times out of 10, somebody in the group will say, oh, my brother has a problem with alcohol, or my daughter, or my son. And you know what? It just opens up the conversation so that it's not that ugly problem that people are having. It's not. It's over. It's a disease. Let's get over this. It's a disease. Nobody wants to wake up. So to me, I'd love to be able to sell more t-shirts only to be able to help other people. And when anybody asks me to like go to New York and help pass a law, I'm going to go. I'm going to do whatever. I'll talk about this until I'm gone. And I'm going to encourage many young people to find out that they are enough so that they can carry on. Because I feel that every time I help somebody, it's really funny how they help a whole bunch of people, right? In their neighborhood or their little section of the world. So we created Sober is the New Cool Ambassadors only because I feel that human connection is key. I mean, if you know, you can do the FaceTime and all that I do it all the time and I love it. But if someone's in your neighborhood and you can go for a walk or you can go for coffee, I think that's huge. Mm-hmm. So that's why these women and men have decided to say, yes, they would be an ambassador just to help where I can't. And for people to know there's somebody close by. And you know what? I'm going to keep, helping anyone who asks. I always say yes. It's that simple.
Yeah. And yes, you do. You did mention something really interesting, you know, drinking age in Canada, 18, and then reference your family. And so much of this, and I've seen it not just with alcohol, but, you know, primarily marijuana, and it has become another cultural thing. It just becomes so embedded. And I mean, I'm guessing you probably grew up with family, you know, every Canadian friend I had, I said, yeah, I grew up in my dad, my uncles, and even my mom, maybe they're, you know, popping beers at the end of the night or on the weekends. And that's what it consisted of.
And especially I find in, you know, middle class or upper middle class, it was almost worse. There were more parties, there were more events. And you know what, even now, every time you see an advertisement, you know, somebody's on a yacht with a bottle of, vodka or whatever, they're on a plane. They're, you know, it's so unrealistic. You know, they'll show somebody lying down on the floor or throwing up in the bathroom, you know, like, so that's really, you know, but it was so socially accepted and it still is, you know, It really is. Nobody really says, you know, that's why everybody says, why don't you drink? Why don't you drink? And I said, why do you?
Yeah.
Why do you? You know? Yeah. Like, and you know, if you throw it back, it's kind of funny. And I kind of giggle when I say it because it's kind of like, they have no problem asking me why I don't drink. So why shouldn't I ask them why they do?
Yeah.
Right? No, but you know, when you think about it, it's true, isn't it?
I've done that with a few people and I have yet to get a really good answer.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe my famous line was, I only had 2 glasses of wine.
Ah, yeah, exactly. I was good at that. It was just a couple of beers, not mentioning that they were the really tall, big beers where it's essentially 2, 2.5 beers. But yeah, exactly. It's the way we'll regurgitate it. And it is, I don't know about Canada, but it's so incredibly well marketed here. You know, it's aligned with every sport. You know, yeah. the summertime, you know, the guy with the girl in the bikini, and, you know, there's so many of these things that, you know, as a kid, I can go back and remember like the jingles from beer commercials on TV, yeah. You know?
And in Montreal, I mean, I'm in a huge city and I live close to the city. And for me to find non-alcoholic, I mean, there's a few in the wine store, but they're not the good ones. To find good ones, I found the first place two weeks ago, and now somebody else told me about another place, but it's like far. It's not like in the city where it should be. In New York City, when I was there for Fashion Week, I thought, okay, I have people coming to meet me at the hotel. I'm going to get like some non-alcoholic. I couldn't find anything that was close by, and we were staying right in the center, you know, right near Central Park, right near Broadway. There was no reason why it would be that hard for me, and I couldn't find it.
Yeah.
Couldn't find it. So Europe is much ahead of us, I think. We're finally, you guys are getting there now with all these social sober events, which is kind of cool, because it was the first time I was in a room with 250 people that were sober.
Huh.
It was, and my husband too, okay. There was no booze, so he couldn't obviously drink. But it was electrifying. It was a high that I swear for days afterwards. It was like a buzz. Like the whole room was unbelievable. I can't even describe the feeling of being in a room with 250 people. Now, is that because I felt more comfortable because there was no booze? I don't know. But he drinks and he said he couldn't believe the feeling that was in that room. Isn't that something? Like,
and I think that's one of the misconceptions, like, oh, how am I going to have fun sober? We do. I've told this story. I don't know if I've told it on here, and I don't remember if I told you, but my partner, her and I, our first like real date, we went and saw Kiss, one of my favorite bands. And I said to her, I've never gone and seen them without like having a couple beer. I never got trashed or anything like that. That wasn't my deal at concerts. Like, hey, either I paid for this or I drink, you know. But I said, I'm a little nervous. I don't know how much fun I'm gonna have. And I was up every song, every lyric, singing along. By the end, my voice was gone, and we had a blast. You know, we had a blast. And subsequently, have seen some of my other favorite bands live. That, you know, no drinks, good time.
No, and I have to remember the first sober wedding I went to. The first wedding I went to when I was sober, I was so afraid. I thought, this is going to be so boring. And I remember leaving there saying, I felt so much love in that room. Like, I remembered everything driving home, the placemats, the decor, the bride, the groom, the parents, the joy that was in there. It was incredible. Like, I thought, wow, this is what it's all about. Like, it was like awake. I was like awake. You know, and I thought, this is cool. And for my kids that are 28 and 26, they love it. They love that I'm sober. I have to tell you, my Matthew, obviously for different reasons, because it's like a support system that he can always rely on. But his friends that have had drug problems and alcohol problems, they're coming again, to get sober t-shirts for the first time somebody comes out of rehab or into a party zone with a sober is the new cool t-shirt on for the night, for the kid not to feel out of place. And I couldn't believe when that happened a few weeks ago. I was like, wow, these kids are 25 and 26 and they're worried about their friend and they're going to wear this t-shirt, not because they have a problem, but to help somebody else. And I thought, That's okay. You know, I'm doing something right if kids can do that to help somebody else.
Yeah. Oh, that's touching. That's so awesome. I love it. Speaking on the non-alcohol, it's like for me, I've had a few people reach out like, oh, you drink a non-alcoholic beer, doesn't it trigger you? I'm not one of those people that it does. It's like, no, I enjoy what I would classify as an adult drink.
Yeah,
but I don't want to, for lack of a better term, get shit housed. I don't, you know, it's not my life, but I do enjoy having like St. Patty's Day just came up. I like having a stout, you know, Guinness style beer with corned beef and cabbage. I'm going to have it. I was a person that I liked the taste. And so for me, it's like, no, I don't know. Maybe it's a, it would be like a alcoholics harm reduction method or something, you know, I don't know. But I personally, for me, I enjoy it. A non-alcoholic wine. You know, we've gone on dates and my partner, she doesn't drink either. And all right. Hey, cool. Yeah, I'll try that.
Well, you know, to me, I think whatever works, works. Some people, it's a trigger. At the beginning, I was in an event and somebody poured wine, real wine, into my glass instead of the non-alcoholic stuff. And that was a bit of a scary. So I knew by then, from then on, I had to really pay attention to what I was doing. But lately, I found a few different options that I really do love. And, you know, I always have my Perrier anyways in a fancy wine glass or champagne glass. And I think it makes you feel like you're celebrating even though you're not drinking. And the other thing we have to get rid of, and this is like a myth, and my kids say it all the time, you can't cheers or say, you know, santé when you're drinking water or soda. And I said, oh, no. That's got to go. That's something I'm going to work on, because they said, no, mom, it brings bad luck. I said, no. What brings bad luck is drinking too much and having a car crash on the way home. That brings bad luck, right?
Yeah.
So to me, I don't drink it very often, only because I haven't found too many that are not sweet. And just lately, I found some that are not. So, and with the spring coming, I will try and find more options, because I find, again, right now, the big buzz is going on is how are we going to manage not drinking with the nice season coming, you know, like, you know, the spring weather, the places, the outdoor cafes, the outdoor this, the outdoor bars that are opening. How am I going to get through that? Those party, you know, summer days, you know, and there's as long as people can just have it. And I think if you have friends that don't drink, just do them a favor and have something near, you know, whether it's a pitcher of water with lemons and berries in it, or one kind of option. I think it's kind of nice. And bring stuff with you when you're going somewhere, because why not, right?
Yeah, no, that's my thing too. So it's the nice thing with the beer here, you know, mostly you can find like the big brand will have an option, but I'll take it with me. And then that way I've got something in my hand. No one seems to offer anything either. Not that I'm not good at, you know, I'm at the point now in my recovery where I can go, no, thank you. But it just kind of, it's like, I just wanted to eliminate it altogether. No, I'm good. I got something. You know what I'm saying? It just makes it easier.
And I have to say, for my young son, Matthew, he's just like, with COVID, it was easy because he's not great with the social, you know, when everybody's drinking kind of thing. And to be quite honest with you, I'm not a big fan of staying out till late when people start, you know, slurring or repeating the same story that I heard at 7 o'clock. So I kind of go home a little earlier. But for him, I find his gang, and this is where I'm so happy that this younger generation is like that. He went to watch March Madness the other night, and one of the guys had made sure that there was non-alcoholic beer for him. And I thought, bravo, you know? Yeah. So he was comfortable, and it's the first time and the longest time that he stayed out to midnight with a bunch of guys, not feeling like he felt like he belonged, like he was part of the evening.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, all of us just want to feel a good sense of community.
Yes.
We really do. Because whether you like it or not, we're communal animals, people. We just are. Just how we are. Kim, if people want to find out more about Sober is a New Cool, grab a shirt, where can they go?
So soberisthenewcool.ca is our website. On Instagram, it's every word with a period in between. So Sober is the New Cool with a period in between. We're on Facebook, Sober is the New Cool. We're on TikTok. I'm not big on TikTok. And Twitter, I'm not that big on that. But so Instagram is our best place to follow us. And I will get back to you, and I will find somebody in your neighborhood that can help you if you're looking to connect with other people, because I think that's huge. I think that if we can really keep, you know, each other like connected, we're going to be better off.
Yep. And I am here as a testament that Kim means exactly what she says, and she does it and follows through. And You're just wonderful and been in a become an amazing friend. I've made so many friends in Canada now, Kim, that I got to figure out just like a 2-week trek of going from one side of Canada to the other. I love it. Well, let's jump into some random questions.
Okay.
5150 is a lifestyle. We believe in pushing yourself, finding your passion, knowing your dreams and working hard, and always striving to make those dreams your reality. We believe life is too short to sit back and say, what if? Go after it, grab it, and make it happen. Being 5150 is committing to that long, hard road. That road you know is going to be tough, but the most rewarding. That's living the madness. That's 5150. If you're living the 5150 lifestyle, then celebrate by rocking the goods. So listen up, there's a special deal for listeners of Knocking Doors Down. Go to 5150LTM.com and enter code KDD20 and receive 20% off your purchase. That's 5150LTM.com.
All right, random questions, of course, brought to you by 5150LTM. I'm wearing the swag if you're watching the video. If not, click that link in the podcast description. Use KDD20 for 20% off. All right, this is a fun one. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
If I could have one superpower, I would make everybody feel that they are truly loved.
Wow. I don't think that's shown up in a comic book yet, but we need to put that in there. If you could have dinner with any one person, living or not, who would they be?
I think it would have to be, Audrey Hepburn.
Well, why?
Because I just found she did so much good in the world just through all of her acts of kindness and all the wonderful charities she helped. And she was elegant and she was kind and she was soft. And everybody and every article I ever heard or read about her was always something nice that she did towards somebody else. And I admire that in somebody. Truly, truly admire somebody that could be that famous, yet so that accessible.
Yeah. No, for sure. And Catherine was one of my favorite actors of all time. I just loved Catherine Hepburn. Oh, she's just brilliant to me. You're stranded on a deserted island. You can have one movie with you and one music artist's greatest hits.
The movie would be Pretty Woman. Only because, you know, she comes from a place that she's so broken and she ends up not only helping herself, but helping her friends that were with her along the way. So to me, that was huge. And music would have to be, I guess, I have so many. The Bee Gees, I guess, because they had so many. Yeah, I loved their music growing up. And I mean, I was just, it was all about hope and love and kindness and goodness and the beat in the background. But there's so many. I mean, yeah. I love music. That's one of my passions now, to get through a day when I'm starting to feel low. Music is my key, running and music.
When I talk to some younger people, sometimes we get into music. I often bring up the Bee Gees and they're like, Staying Alive guy. I'm like, you don't realize how many good albums they had. Oh my gosh. And if you go back and look at their track record of hit after hit, plus they wrote so many songs for so many other people, tons of songs, you know, talented guys. Amazing.
And also, I think also Lady Gaga, because she talks all about mental health and awareness and addiction and everything. So I would probably choose her too. I mean, that would be, I just thought of that, but she's someone that, so many times I've been inspired by her work and the songs that she sings for everyone, you know, to be able to relate to.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah, I'm a fan of hers. If there was one pop star that I could speak with that I haven't already, it'd be her. She's just phenomenal. A fascinating person. Fascinating. Last book you read?
Last book I read was actually Sober is Dope.
Really?
I just received it in the mail last weekend, and that was the last book I read. I'd seen a lot of different stories and people talking about it, and so I purchased it. And I'm a big fan of reading all different books from people that are in our world, and just to see how I can help others more. You know, mm-hmm. I just find there's I learn something, and I also see a lot of myself in most of these books that I've read lately.
Yeah. The last thing that I would say is along our, you know, our field of recovery and mental health was Nikki Sixx of Motley Crue's book, 21, and it's about the first 21 years of his life. And he wrote it to really paint the picture of a life that would lead to addiction the way that it did. And you're just like, okay, whoa, I felt that way too. I know exactly what that was. I was trying to escape that myself. And so it's for me, I love when someone puts it out there, because it does, it just brings that other layer of, okay, I'm not alone, you know. And sometimes we all need a reminder.
Yeah, and the other book you should read is the book by Harry Eaton and his mother, Senator Madeleine Kane. Oh. It's a story about a mother and a son, his version of how he was in his addiction and her version of the same events. Huh. And it's fascinating. They're two wonderful human beings. I love them. But for Harry to come out and in their, you know, social status and whatever, to be able to share their story. And I could see now when I think how I was and how Matthew sees different situations, it really makes a mother and son or mother, father and son see that, you know, how different it is and what really happened, you know, because there's always your side, my side, and what really happened. That's another really, and the book is called Under Our Roof.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle, right? Yeah, you know, when people have asked me, hey, do you think you'll ever write a book? I've always thought that I would have to incorporate other people that were really close to me and have their perspective, because my memory of life in general, I don't know why, it's just I've got big gaps of things, or and stuff will come back like, gosh, I've never thought about that from when I was six. I always thought that would be a really interesting way of just having the perspective of others, you know, especially the people like, you had a problem, I never knew you had a problem, you know. It was like,
and it's kind of funny how you think you know what's going on under your roof and you don't really, you know. And I had that similar situation when a psychiatrist said something to me with my son, and it was like a slap in the face. She said, you're one of those working moms. And I said, no, I'm at home and all the kids are in my house and the sleepovers are at my house, the barbecues are at my house. And she said, well, you've been missing a few things, haven't you? And I love this woman. She gave me back my life also. So it wasn't an insult what she was saying to me, but that was the truth. I wasn't connected to where I should be. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that is. All right, Kim, you're such a lovable person, but you have to have at least one pet peeve. One thing that just irks you and annoys you.
I don't like seeing anybody judge anybody else. Until you walk into somebody's shoes, I don't care if they drink every single day and then stop and then start again and you're mad and you're angry, and I get all that. But until you walk in somebody's shoes, don't judge them. And just keep trying to lift them up. I know it's hard and I know it could be trying, but everybody deserves to feel a second chance, third, fourth, fifth, until we get it right.
Yeah. Kim, if you had any advice from your standpoint for anyone maybe struggling with substance abuse or any kind of addiction for that matter, or a loved one, be it mental health, whatever it is, what might you lend?
I would ask them to reach out. But I've learned in the last few years that saying that to somebody that's really struggling is not like, doesn't really work too well. So I'm working on that right now, to either find an emoji that somebody could send that would be like SOS without saying SOS, or I'm in trouble, or, you know, having to go through a series of question and answer periods. That's not, just let us know and we'll be there. And I haven't found that yet. And I have to find that so that people make it as easy as possible for somebody to just press that button and let it go, you know, without having to say, oh, I don't feel good, I don't want to get out of bed, you know, all. No. Let's just simplify it so that it makes it easy for them to know we're there, and just sit in silence or hold their hands or do whatever you have to. But I have to find a way to make it easier, because it's saying reach out doesn't seem to be, sometimes it works, but I'd like to find a better way. So maybe you can find a better way for me.
Well, the wheels started turning a little bit.
Isn't it true though? Isn't it true? It is, you know. So people shut down. People, you know, it's like the turtle. They put their head in. They don't want to share that they're sad or they're feeling suicidal or they want to drink again. And you know, they're afraid of, you know, afraid of failure, afraid of everything. So there's got to be a, I don't know what it is yet, but I'm going to ask as many people as I can. And I was even told, don't tell anybody because you should do this on your own. And now it's not about finding the cure by yourself or the thing. It's about everybody getting together and finding it for everybody else, I think, anyway.
Yeah, I think that for anyone in any situation, sometimes that is definitely the toughest thing to, because of the story and the meaning we put behind so much of our life, to just say, I need help.
Yeah.
You know? It's tough.
It's really hard to ask for. And I think also the other thing is I feel so honored that people trust me enough to share. So I just think that they need to know there's more people that they can share with, you know, and that they're not going to rip them down or tear them apart. And that's hard to trust somebody after you've been hurt so much in your life, I think.
Absolutely. Kim, thank you. It's good to see your wonderful face and hear your voice again and just to have a conversation with you. I adore you. I love you. And I'm appreciative to have gotten to know you.
Oh, and me too. And, you know I was bugging you at one point, checking in with some of our friends. So I will continue to do that. So sorry if I'm a bit of a pest, but I feel that we're better together, you and I, checking in on our friends.
No, absolutely not. And we have to do that. And sometimes I need a reminder. So no, I'm grateful. Don't ever see it that way at all.
Okay, good. Anyway, you're not getting rid of me now.
I don't plan on it. I have nothing in the plans for that at all. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Jason.
This is the Knocking Doors Down podcast, featuring celebrities, experts, and everyday people who have overcome adversities, including addiction, mental health, and trauma, to live purposeful lives. And that's what Knocking Doors Down is all about.